This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Babs Gray, and I think COVID is actually just a ploy to make sluts domesticize because this bitch made drapes.
Congratulations on the drapes, Barbara.
Thank you.
This week, my dog and I looked at a bowl of mac and cheese in the middle of the street for the same amount of time. So that's how quarantine's treating me.
I'm Tess Barker, and the news is a nightmare, but at least there's a lot of it.
And this is Lady to Lady.
Can you keep a secret?
Neither can we.
Hello! We got Barbara, Brandy, and of course Big Tess. We got a show for everyone that's the fucking best. Come on, baby. It's time to hang out with your favorite ladies. Lady to Lady, Lady to Lady.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. We're coming to you from all corners of the nation. Not really, but I'm going to pretend that kind of like a Care Bear, like Avenger situation. I don't know.
I feel
Avengers
very Care Bears, Avengers, Power Rangers right now. Absolutely.
There we go. Power Rangers. I think that's the best. Yeah.
One. Yeah. Do you know Power Rangers filmed at the junior college where I used to take summer school?
Well, now everybody does. What a beautiful...
Now they need two plaques, one for Power Rangers and one for you. All right, let's bring on our guest. They're the amazing host of American Hysteria, a great podcast. Please welcome Chelsea Weber-Smith to the stage. I was going to say stage. Podcast.
The ear stage.
The ear stage.
The ear stage is fine. Stage is fine. Thank you. I really appreciate y'all having me on. This is great.
Hi, Chelsea. Where are you coming from?
I'm coming from Seattle, so an actual corner.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah.
We're nearing in on the corners.
And then you guys are, you're LA and then Big Bear right now, right?
Yeah, yeah. Barbara and Tess are both in LA. I am up in Big Bear, so if I am weird and cutting in and out, it's because of the mountains.
No, Brandy, I found out earlier that you were in Big Bear, and I was already feeling like, I was telling Chelsea and Babs earlier, like, I feel like today has a very vacation vibe to it, and I might be saying that because I had half a glass of wine at lunch.
Perfect. Hey, I walked past a Mexican place out here, and there was a table of four boomers that had the largest margaritas I've ever seen in my life, so I think everyone is taking that energy.
That is a vibe. Yes. I just got back from floating a river, and that was, I haven't done that in a very long time. It's lazy river, but like a real one in nature. Yeah. Imagine.
Yeah.
No, so it was beautiful.
How long were you floating for?
Well, we did it once and it was like an hour and a half and we said, you know what, let's do it again. So we just did the same one again. No,
oh,
it was
perfect.
Great. It was so perfect. I love it. I'm going to be doing it again. I mean, there's nothing. It is the most like serene, beautiful experience to just drink a beer on a river in a floaty. I mean, come on. What could be better?
Yeah.
It's free. It's free. What kind of fun shit can you do for free?
Everything about this is giving me like such bad FOMO because like Babs was saying, there's nowhere in the Southern California region to get a good float, really.
Yeah.
No, not really.
And you're on fire. The rivers are on fire.
The places where I've done floats are currently on fire. Yeah. So.
Yes.
As much as of an added element of excitement that adds, I'm not doing it.
And if I was going to be floating anywhere in the middle of a forest fire, I guess I'd want to be in the body of water.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you want to be. It's funny, when I checked in up here at Big Bear, I saw the Wi-Fi was slow in my room, and I called down, and they're like, sorry, we don't know if it's the smoke or the rain that is slowing down the Wi-Fi. And I was like, oh, well, at least we have both.
I didn't know that Wi-Fi worked like that.
Me either.
Neither did I. They might have been completely bullshitting me, but that's what they said.
Yeah, if smoke's getting in the way, there might just be bullshit.
You know what? I'm going to be honest, though. I don't know enough about Wi-Fi to tell you whether it does or doesn't affect it.
I know that the internet is a series of tubes. And then other than that.
In the ocean.
Yeah.
In the bottom of the ocean.
What?
Yeah.
The whole internet is in the ocean?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I think that there's like hubs in buildings.
Okay.
Generally the tubes, maybe. But there are tubes in the ocean that are the internet, and that's all I know.
I was listening to something where you know how Al Gore just got made fun of for saying like the internet is a series of tubes, but then I listened to something being like, but it is. in the ocean. Yeah, but he's right.
There's so much to make fun of Al Gore for, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. The way he wears his pants.
Have you done an American Hysteria about Al Gore and his pants? Or
No, I haven't. And I don't, you know, I'm not sure if he's ever even come up one time. And maybe that says something
about
how
boring Al Gore is. That's probably good. He can just kind of exist in his Gore bubble that I'm assuming he exists in.
Hey, he tried to draw attention to climate change.
That's true. He tried. You know, bless him.
He tried. That's his little heart.
I wonder if he ever had a goth phase with a last name like Gore. It's almost inviting it, right? Like, I wonder if like in middle school he like did his eyes up and like had baggy JNCOs and shit like that.
I think he like
a missed opportunity
against it. Like, it's absolutely. Like, I won't be that.
No, my last name might be Gore, but I'll just be the most boring person. I'll never direct a horror movie, even though my name was actually made for it.
You know what, though? I have to say, like, every time I see Al Gore, my main emotion is happiness. Like, that man just makes me happy.
That's interesting.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like, I actually just watched an episode of 30 Rock that he has a cameo on recently, and I just really love Al Gore. And, like, yeah, of course he lost, and that was really, like, crushing and shaped the entire history of our country. But, but he has actually such a good sense of humor. Like, he tries. Like, he's not good at being funny, but he's, like, down to make a joke of himself. He's an uncle.
He wants to be funny.
And his kid, like, writes for The Simpsons. And, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, his daughter is a writer for The Simpsons and Futurama.
What a fun fact.
I know. Wow.
What does it have to do with him being...
I don't know. Like, I feel like your kid ends up writing for The Simpsons. You're kind of fun.
You're either fun or you're not fun at all.
And your child's rejected you and gone to the other end of the spectrum. I mean,
nepotism's a thing, too.
That's
I know. Somebody posted that, like, Bryce Dallas Howard thing of, like, I did 48 auditions before I got a role. And I was like, like... And
and then they read my full name and they were like, oh shit, I'm sorry. Here you go. Yeah.
I feel bad because apparently the video is very inspirational. I didn't watch it, but I was just like, okay, well, it's been 12 years. Get back to me later. I don't know what to tell you.
You know what? But regardless of anything else, we have Tipper Gore to thank for the parental advisory sticker. And that was a lot of t-shirts and a lot of posters and a lot of my friends.
Defined a generation.
Yes.
We do talk about that on American Hysteria quite a bit, you know, because we talk about like, parental advisory and like the hysteria around satanic lyrics and, all that kind of stuff is wrapped into what we're talking about.
So that was largely a campaign around like Satanism? Like, what was the history around that?
You know, it was partially at least. I mean, it was just like the 80s, leftover satanic panic. There was, satanic cults in the 80s, allegedly. And they were indoctrinating people through music, through metal, and then through, anything from cartoons to video games. It was very much that had a big, surprisingly large part to do with it because they labeled it as occult lyrics. Mm-hmm. So it was like sexually graphic lyrics, swearing, and then occult lyrics, which is
I'm on Wikipedia right now, and this says that Gore heard her 11-year-old daughter playing Darling Nikki by Prince, and that's what really, really set her off.
Fuck yes.
Your boy.
I mean, and if anybody should have had a cult, it should have been Prince.
I mean,
absolutely. Like, that's a cult people could get behind, I think.
I mean, he was a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah, it was like he basically
he was in a cult.
He probably had some skills as a cult leader, I imagine.
He could be a franchise owner. He could have started his own operation.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's so funny. Oh, man. Yeah. Twisted Sister, Jello Biafra, Dead Kennedys, Joey Ramone, Frank Zappa. We're like all targets of it and everything. That's funny. Satanic Panic is so interesting to talk to look at because it's also like so much of the stuff that Satanists were accused of is stuff that was like actually happening within the government too, which is the hilarious part of all of it.
Well, it's very much coming back. I don't know if you guys pay attention to like Trump talking about QAnon.
I've just heard him saying nice things about them, right?
Yeah. Well, they were like, so QAnon says that you're trying to save America from a satanic pedophile cult you're the only one who can bring them down. How do you feel about that? And he said, is that supposed to be a bad thing or a good thing? So, you know, it was it's dark, though. It's like very funny. But then you realize that there's like millions of people that subscribe to this idea that Donald Trump is like this beefy Christian hero. That's
those cartoons they draw
down
of him, like on the motorcycles that are like,
yeah,
it's so gross. Well, it's like, you're such a loser. It's just
I haven't let myself go down this rabbit hole yet. So. Wow. Okay. So there's a Christian element to QAnon? Because I thought it was like 4chan.
It is 4chan, but it's like they just use the Christian thing because it's all about black and white, right? It's like evil. And then if you've got a satanic cult, then I guess you have to have a Christian hero sort of thing.
Exactly.
So, I mean, and even as Christianity is like status quo, right? Like if you wrap in like white supremacy, like it's like he's saving us from the liberal agenda, right, which we all know is what it is. So it's not a baby eating cult.
Yeah,
I don't think.
So QAnon,
but you know, I'm open.
I mean, a number of us are we vegans or do we eat babies? Which one is it?
Both.
Okay.
So you only care about animals, but we'll the humans
babies.
Are disposable.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I don't. Yeah, sure. I only know the like cursory outside of the QAnon stuff, which is that they think that there's a pedophile thing running everything. But my boyfriend, his old roommate, started posting stuff about going to rallies for these Protect the Children, like QAnon rallies. Of course, not a mask to be seen. And we just watched his stories yesterday of him at a protest in Hollywood. And he's holding up this interviewer's talking to him. And he can't. He's so bad at the interview. He's like, he's saying nothing. And the interviewer is so bored and like literally looking the opposite way while he talks. He's like, they're at a party and he's trying to find someone else to talk
beautiful.
To. It was so funny.
Well, who else but a QAnon supporter is that person that you get trapped at a party, you know? QAnon is like the Illuminati, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the story that there's like this secret elite society that's often Jewish, by the way,
because
it's very anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and so QAnon is like this group that's supposedly fighting the deep state, which is just this Illuminati story, which has been around for 300 years, just taking all these different forms. And so it's like not surprising, but now it's like a mass political movement and people
are
being elected.
That's what scares me
on this platform.
Yeah, it getting popular is very, very scary.
You know, I watched recently that documentary Behind the Curve. Have you guys seen that? The Flat Earther documentary?
Mm-mm.
No, but I can imagine.
Oh my God. I really recommend it. It was fascinating because I don't know. I'm very curious about that phenomenon. Like, why did that pop up all of a sudden 5 years ago? And like, how could that many? Yeah. But they did a really good job of showing how much of it actually is about like the community that they've built. And like, once they get in, like, they don't want to be proven wrong because it's all these lonely people who finally have a sense of community. And I think it's the same thing with the QAnon shit. I mean, I think that's kind of a lot of it. What it boils down to is that people are just so fucking alienated and they're fine. It's like you can look at it from the outside and like, how could you believe something so fucking ridiculous? But this documentary did such a good job of just showing that
that's
not
what's so
really
sad is it's all like
what it's about.
Yeah. Everyone is like disenfranchised and just like grasping at straws for why, you know, they want their life to be better, why like things aren't working out. And it seems like, yeah, they want to like just kind of believe these crazy things because it's, yeah, it gives them a sense of community and some sense of like, okay, I know what's really going on here. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gives you control in society that like raised you to be individualistic, which is naturally human beings are meant to be, you know, we like
absolutely
are meant to be communal people. And like, you know, then yeah, you find this thing, you know, but I know the truth. And it's like, no, like,
I do yeah. feel sometimes like though, mm-hmm. because we are meant to be communal, but I don't think we're supposed to know
we're
this
not.
Many people.
No, no,
so
not.
So it like it's like gets confused because you're like, there's no way we can all figure out what everyone else wants. It's just impossible. But we all have access to everything now. So no wonder like we can't fucking decide yeah. anything.
We even did like on that tip of like these lonely, alienated people trying to find control. Right. Which is conspiracy theory. Like you hit the nail on the head. Right. It's yeah. it is like trying to control the chaos into this simple narrative where there's like good and evil and like I'm a good guy and you're a bad guy and we can save the world and all of this stuff where it's like the world is like this horrifyingly complicated mm-hmm. mess that I have no idea how we'll ever fix. But I think we even did like a men's rights episode, which I'm sure as you just immediately cringe like I do. But it was we tried to take a very I don't want to say sympathetic, but like,
yeah,
on our show, we're like, OK, these people think this. We have to understand why they think that yeah. or we're mm-hmm. never going to figure it out. Yeah. We can't just be like, you know,
absolutely. You have to know and what's going on. And yeah,
you gotta know. And yeah. And that's what I found at the end of the day. It was like these lonely dudes, mm-hmm. super like sad, who then just get together and pump each other up
yeah.
with like why they're a victim and then why mm-hmm. women are victimizing them. Mm-hmm. And then they just like. It's almost it's like then it becomes a contest of masculinity, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. well, I'm going to do this horrible thing. Well, I'm going to do this horrible thing. And women mm-hmm. are this to me, you know, and it just mm-hmm. like goes up and up and up and up and up until you get like Elliot Rodger or someone like that. That
yeah,
just
yeah.
snaps. Mm-hmm. But really at the mm-hmm. heart, it's just like these dudes that can't feel sadness because mm-hmm. like society says men can't feel sadness. So it's just like this. I don't know. It's everything's so complicated. It's well, just all really yeah, no. sad.
My husband was watching some documentary about war recently, and they were talking about how, you know, what we all know that like combat for men especially has historically been this place of like really serious male bonding. And like there's mm-hmm. kind of like nothing like the relationships you forge in war. And like and like it seems like to a large extent, like that's why there's this like kind of bloodlust. It's not about like the killing. It's about like actually the friendships that they have with their fellow soldiers. And I just thought, shit, like, is this just because like they don't just like go get like fucking pedicures with their friends, like know how to enjoy the company of men? You know what I mean? Like women, we don't need to do that.
I kind of think it is.
A lot of it is. Absolutely. A lot of it is. Yeah. I mean, like we just won't like. Them being able to like open up and have conversations without some sort of, you know, we've like not we but like society for whatever reason because toxic masculinity and patriarchy has like feminized actually sharing emotions and having real opinions with each other. So like that's where guys are able to do it because they're doing a manly thing at the same time.
Yeah.
It's why football and shit's so powerful because it's like guys are like, we're getting together, we're watching men break each other's brains. Hell yeah, I love you, but like I love our team more. You know, it's like all that shit.
It's just the conduit for the brotherly yeah. love. They just want to hold hands and they can't do it. And now we have war.
It's so fucked you know? Up. It's like, can we just let them hold hands so we don't have to have war?
Well, yeah, hold hands.
I remember reading a study a couple of years ago that was really interesting. And this was maybe 5 years ago now. So I'd be curious to see what it looks like now with the internet and with Trump and everything. But they found a very marked difference between the way that male friendships existed from under 24 and above 24, based on like how old they were. Yeah. And kids that at that point were under 24, male, the boys were like so much more comfortable with each other and telling each other that they loved them and like holding hands and like doing stuff like that. Just like straight guys, just like really embracing the intimacy between like their friendships like way, way more. But there was a very marked line of the age where like that started becoming more acceptable in society.
Wow.
So I'd be curious to know how much of that has like regressed based on like the last few years. But I mean, that I could see that because that is what like, you know, progress looks like, you know, is you know, hopefully chipping away at, you know, toxic masculinity over time.
Well, and then it does that pendulum thing, right?
Mm-hmm,
like,
exactly.
We made a lot of progress during yeah. the mm-hmm. Obama administration, right? I feel like toward some sort
in
of,
some
like,
things, yeah.
in some things, like, yeah. you know, gay marriage, stuff like that, where it was like, everything's fine. It's like, we can be you know, interpersonally intimate in this different way. And then it's like everybody freaked out. It was like, yeah, no, we can't. We have to have Donald Trump as president and go back. But then, you know, I just think it'll go back again, I hope. I mean, if we make it through.
If there isn't again, it'll go back.
Yeah. One day. Yep.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Man, it's so interesting. How many of these, it's so interesting too, because those groups spring up and like they want to become, they're looking for a community, but they also isolate themselves away from anything outside of it so hard too, where it's like, if you actually just approached anybody with like that feeling, you would find community with people that have all sorts of like different views and whatnot. You're ultimately isolating yourself.
Yeah, I don't think it comes naturally to people, you know, to be open. And we do kind of like tend to just, I think it's very easy. It's so easy to isolate yourself now.
Well, it's encouraged. And like a common enemy really does bond you.
Yeah. Anyone
who's ever been in an improv class knows that.
Yeah. Well, we do encourage people to be isolated. I mean, like from everything. It's like, you know, in jobs and things like that too. It's like
it's like the American way, man. Yeah. American individualism. That's like, bigger here than probably anywhere else. You know, we talk about that a ton, of just like, we're a communal species, but you know, under capitalism, you know, that's not really what you do. You're always competing at all times forever. I mean, we compete with everything from like our emotions to like our victimhoods to our, you know, our jobs to every aspect of our lives, even like the ways we love each other. You know, there's like a competitive aspect of like, well, you did this last week, you know, so it's like we want to win like everything we do. And it's not working for us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like solidarity stands exactly in exact
it's
opposition.
It's not working for us, and it makes Twitter really.
Yeah, it makes me want to burn my computer.
Yeah. Yeah. Twitter is one of the many ways that my psyche is being gamified that I could live without.
Yeah, capitalism is bad. Anyway, we have to take a break for an ad. We'll be back in a second.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Lady. I'm Brandy.
I'm Babs.
I'm Tess.
And we're with Chelsea Weber Smith, the host of American Hysteria. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the podcast? And like, I mean, I know you guys, you cover a lot of things, but kind of your general vibe.
Yeah, we got a general pitch here. Let's see. So we do moral panics, urban legends, conspiracy theories, and American fantastical thinking. And it's all through, we explore like sociology, psychology, biology, everything like pop culture from the Puritans to the present. And even sometimes like what things were like before the Puritans came over. But we'll take something like Stranger Danger. That's our first episode. And we'll look at, you know, the heyday of it in the 90s and this thing that we all remember probably vividly being taught that like we're going to be snatched out of suburbia.
Wait, hold on.
Is
Stranger Danger no longer in play?
I guess it is. Okay. I think it's always coming back. Okay. It's just like, because we trace it all the way back, right, to like the stories that the colonists told about indigenous people snatching children, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like there's this narrative that keeps coming back, and we use it against people all the time, and we're still doing it. But then, you know, we'll do something like even poison Halloween candy and this whole myth that people harm Halloween candy, which has never happened. And then we go back to like when candy was a really scary thing, and when John Harvey Kellogg of Kellogg's fame believed that candy led children to masturbate. And so he created cornflakes with no sugar. Like a huge thing. And then he also like did some really, really horrible things to children because of that. Great. I know. And so we remember these. We go back and we find this like crazy shit from the past. But that it's like it has like there like Harvey Kellogg ran like the Goop of the late 1800s. It was like a health spa for rich weirdos, as they would say in Rocky Horror. You know, like it's so we'll go back and just kind of like find all these old things and then connect it all together. into the present day, but more so we cover history, and it's all through why we fear the wrong things and then what those fears are actually covering up. So, like, for example, QAnon and the Illuminati would be covering up the fact that we live in this chaotic world, but we want control. So we'll look at it through what we were like, you know, like as hunter-gatherers, and then like what psychologists say, sociologists. And you know, I just read a lot of really dry, boring academic papers and then try to make it funny. That's like mostly what the show is.
That's amazing. Someone needs to do it. I mean,
Yeah.
It sounds like just as much work as we put into this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So.
We read so many papers for this show. It's
Can you
tell us like the origins of the Halloween candy one, like why people said that there were razors in candy and stuff?
Well, there was this is actually pretty fun. So there was one thing that really kind of like kicked it off. There's always been a fear of candy because it was like candy has the same effect on your brain as like a drug or sex or whatever. So people are like, it's sin, you know, they put it in the sin category. And so, but there was in the 80s, I believe it was the late 70s, early 80s, a guy poisoned some pixie sticks, but he was trying to, and he did successfully give them to his kid.
Yeah,
it was like a
children.
Life insurance.
Yeah,
it was a life insurance scenario. So it wasn't like he was handing them out, but I love this part because he was driving around with the cops because he's trying to, like, the cops are like, okay, show us the fucking house that was handing out poison candy. And he was like, oh, you know, like, I don't remember. So they were like making these loops in the neighborhood. And finally, he just like points at a random house. It's like really dark. And he says, oh, it was that one. And what happened was I walked up to the house and I knocked on the door and no one answered and it was totally dark, which is like, why'd you knock on the door? And then he said as he was walking away, like, the door creaked open and all he saw was a single hairy arm going through with a fistful of like jumbo pixie sticks, and then he like grabbed them and the hand like recoiled back into the house.
He's like,
so as soon as the cops heard that, they were like,
story.
All right, this dude killed this kid.
Yeah.
So anyway, but
yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, after that, it was just like the newspapers went nuts.
Of course,
they called him the man that killed Halloween, and then they never really printed their attractions except on like some tiny little things.
Right.
So you get the story without the withdrawal of the story. And then every year somebody puts something in candy, takes a picture of it, puts it on Facebook, and it's some like boomer mom that's just like going to get a bunch of shares and talk to the news. But there's never been like a proven for certain poisonings.
Yeah.
The only time was somebody put a tack in somebody's candy and it like nicked someone's lip. And that's like the highest like place we got here with this poison Halloween candy thing, but we hear it every year. I mean, every single year you can go to the mall, you can go fucking trick or treat at the mall. Well, now you can't. Now you can't do anything. Now you can give people virtual candy, and that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it just
but that's like a good example.
That's so interesting.
Which all just feeds into the individualism as we were talking about before too, where it's like making you scared of literally everybody else and othering you against everyone.
Well, and I think it's important to point out, like, it's time for us to stop stigmatizing candy in this country.
I mean, my God.
It is crazy though how you see that, like how you were talking, I didn't know this, but that the Stranger Danger thing like goes as far back as the colonizers, like, you know, claiming indigenous people to snatch their kids. Because it's like, you see that, and then you look into, like, the 80s, those Lifetime movies where, like, a mom turns around and they're gone. You're like, oh, my God, this shit just goes and goes and then turns into this whole other beast. And it's just in our, like, psyches, and we don't even know it. It's, like, built in because we've been taught that for so long.
Yeah.
In a very real way, like, I think the milk carton thing was, like, a big deal. Because it was, like, before the internet, and you looked at that shit every day while you were having your cereal, while you were having your Kellogg's.
100%.
There was always
100%.
Some, like, little white girl just missing on a milk carton. What's that about?
That was a huge part of it. And there were, like, these, like, handful of super sensationalized crimes against children that happened. Like, for example, Adam Walsh, you know, who... His dad would go on to be, he would go on, not Joe Walsh, what's his name?
No, sorry, yeah. Unsolved Mysteries.
Why am I not on Solve Mysteries from America's Most Wanted?
John Walsh.
There it is. So, you know, things like that. And then this whole show is created about, like, we're going to get that guy. And, you know, like, God bless. I'm not going to say anything about John Walsh. I don't know what that's like. But, like, yeah, there's, like, Johnny Gosch and a handful of other kids, especially the young blue-eyed boys. That was, like, obviously a big one, because you also had like the gay rights movement happening and they were using we have a whole gay agenda episode about, you know, the satanic gay agenda to bring down America, as you all are probably familiar with that plan.
Of course, it's working.
Well, we always
focus on those like blonde blue-eyed kids too, when they're like actually are like, you know, massive amounts of people who, you know, they're called, quote, the lesser dead, that are taken from communities, you know, smaller communities all the time. And those don't get sensationalized at all.
You know? No, they sure don't. And it's kind of the same thing. We're working our premiere episodes on true crime, which is just so exciting, and sort of the, you know, not in any kind of moralistic way, but just the way that true crime and these different stories of true crime have impacted us and sort of made us trust the police a lot more when they don't necessarily deserve that trust. And everything that we think and do is, you know, we're affected by the Zodiac Killer. We're affected by JonBenet Ramsey, and we don't even know it because our culture just moves forward and like gobbles up all these stories. And it just turns into this total narrative that doesn't exist. But then at the same time, I mean, it's true crime, so we're always all going to want to watch true crime shows. But, you know, so it's just that that idea that a serial killer is this white guy, you know, who's like 40 and gross and all those things, when we know it's not true. But at the same time, there's just as many. It's such a weird way that it plays out, because it's like you could be like, there's just as many people of color who are serial killers, which is such a sentence. But like, it's true that the reason
there are, though, and they're not.
And the reason is so simple. It's not like it's just that the victim within murders, usually the victim of the crime is the same race as the perpetrator. So it's because we don't want to cover, or we don't, the media doesn't care to cover stories about people of color who go missing or who are murdered. And so then, you know, logically, you're just going to get this continuous idea of what serial killers look like, of what serial crime looks
this
like,
is,
and
yeah.
of, like, who the victims
serial
really are.
Serial killers, so it's just, come in all,
it's just a total,
you know,
messy.
Race. We need to stand up for
those. Come on.
No, that's a good point. I never even thought about that, but that makes so much sense.
But we need to stand up for the victims, at least, right? We need to stand up for, you know what I'm saying? Like, but it is like, it's just bizarre. I mean, it's so obvious that that would be the reason, right? But yeah, so our show does that. Our show sort of looks at the underlying issues, which are always going to be about race, gender, sexuality, and class. And like, we talk about rednecks, like on our last season, because we did archetypes. So we did like hipsters and rednecks and the history of sort of those characters. And, you know, rednecks is like this psychic dumping ground of American racism. It's like, oh, it's the poor white people over there that are the real racists. When, you know, it's also suburban white people have traditionally been the ones.
Like, if you can make fun of that, then that like sort of excludes you from being racist, because you're othering those racists.
And I'm in Seattle, man. And it's like that people do that all the time, because we're like the most liberal city. But then it's like, are we, you know? So, you know, so definitely everything kind of has a root in that stuff, even when I don't want it to, you know. It's like, oh, this episode's going to be really chill. And then it's like, I'll read some essay about why it has to do with, you know, gender or race. And it'll just be this whole of like, no, it's happening again. And then you just realize that the entire foundation of America is based on these sort of prejudices.
Back. You just spin the wheel and
spin the wheel
to at least one.
Yeah, to something horrible.
Exactly. Well, and so much of the things you cover too, like they're so insidious, because like you have like your satanic panic and like your QAnon and everything. And that is like a not reality, but there is a version of that that actually is real to some certain degree. It's like we're looking at like Epstein and Ghislaine and everything, and like that's not a part of QAnon, but that QAnon redirects the conversation away from actual trafficking that is actually happening and is being prosecuted currently. And it, you need to get those victims' truths through this whole new thing where you're like, John F. Kennedy Jr.'s alive, and you're like, no.
Well, you know, the QAnon is calling the child sex trafficking lines, which is also a very, I would like to direct Jesus people Christ. To listen to the You're Wrong About. I don't know if you guys have ever heard that podcast. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But they do a great episode about sex trafficking that really like untangles a lot of the myths and like who's really being trafficked and how often and what really counts as trafficking. And it's a great episode. But regardless of that, like QAnon is calling all these, you know, child sex trafficking lines and saying things like, you know, Hasbro's grooming children through their dolls and, you know, and that QAnon, that Trump's trying to save, that, you know, Wayfair is shipping children in boxes. Yeah. That was one that came up recently, you know, so it's, there are these very serious, very serious consequences. But yeah, I mean, often they come from some heart of truth. And I'm sure the Epstein stuff did not help at all, even though of course it's all about Clinton's relationship to Epstein and conveniently not Trump. So
yeah, exactly.
For a lot of reasons, we just aren't, a lot of people are not trained to critically think about things, and because of that, they don't know how to look and see how things are sourced. They don't know how to look and see it. So I mean, again, to go back to the Flat Earther documentary, like a lot, they think they're doing research. These people are reading books. They're watching videos. They're trying to learn stuff. And a lot of these videos have graphs and what looks like equations and what looks like a scientist is showing them. Really, truly. You know, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. No, 100%.
I mean, it's true. What looks like a scientist, he has a coat, a lab
but
coat.
But truly, I mean, you know, they put fucking bar graphs and shit. And it's the same thing with like, with like all the pseudoscience stuff where they try to sell you oils and stuff. Like they kind of try to show it to you in a way that like mocks actual science, because if you don't have the background to understand how actual research looks, how are you going to discern that?
No, whenever someone posts like on Facebook posts an article from one of those websites that's like mymomlovescience.net or whatever, some like weird site that you're like, this is not a real website. Like, would you just like look at that?
GreenEarthRevolt.com or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, like, we do. We have a quackery.
We've got a quackery. Like parentsareyourfriends.com or something. Yeah. What is this?
Trust
your doctor, parents. Yeah, we do quackery. We did a whole quackery episode.
Perfect.
We came for Gwyneth Paltrow, bless her heart. You know, which again, we do this from a pretty non, like, I'm not judgmental. I don't know. Like, I don't know what matters.
I'm controversial on GP because I think she's full of shit, but I think it's like good for her for like whatever. Who isn't full
of shit? That's kind
of
how I feel. Yeah. And I mean, the people she's ripping off are people who are already pretty rich.
That's what
it seems
I mean.
Like, so it's like, whatever.
Like, if you're looking to buy an egg for your pussy from the star of Shakespeare in Love, like, it's on you to know how healthy that
is.
Like,
a jade. And it's jade.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah, I feel worse about the ones who come on, like, tabloid talk shows and are targeting people who, like, don't have a lot of money. It's like a televangelist who's like, please, I need to buy a second jet. You know,
oh my god, those like buy holy water commercials and shit.
They're crazy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. John Oliver did a really great breakdown of those churches and like what bullshit they are and how they make all their money and through tithings and seed money and all this shit.
That's insane. I mean, that's what's so crazy. Like what Tess was saying is that people are doing their own. Everyone can like have something to support what they want, even if it is obviously fake to the rest of us. Like it looks legit to them, or they feel like it's legit. So at that point, you're like.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what the fuck did I say to this?
Chelsea, I have a question. So your show is called American Hysteria. Did you like specifically choose like America because we have more of this than other countries? And is that based on like, you know, like the UK has like libel laws and stuff? So like you're able to stop like the false realities from really like spiraling and going as far as they do. You have any idea like why that's such an American phenomenon?
You know, I chose to because I wanted to have it be kind of like a, it's like a it's just a way to explore America too. Like our show is very much about America at large and like the psychology of us as a country and our history and all that stuff. So I wanted to focus on America because I know America and I don't know world history that well, but I do know American history really well. But I do think, I mean, I think there's a great book called Fantasyland by Kurt Anderson, and I recommend it to people because he really goes into how America was formed by a bunch of just like batshit crazy people. Because even before the Puritans, we know that. Like we talk about freedom of religion, but it was freedom to be like way more religious in way more extreme ways. It wasn't like, oh, we're all going to have a great time together. It was like, you're being too gay. That was a big reason the Puritans wanted to leave. Then it was also about, before the Puritans even came, it was like these people who were paid by the crown to come over and look for gold. And there was no gold. So it was like, and then you think about people moving west and like people on the Oregon Trail, and you're like, this is insane that you're making this choice. And so it's like, it's all about the magical thinking of how America was formed with like manifest destiny. We can do whatever we want. You know, God is driving us all forward. And at the same time, we're going to just completely ignore the fact that we're just on this continent and we have no idea where we're going or what we're doing. So it's just very much about how we were kind of formed by this insane idea that we were almost invincible and that we were so special and that, you know, I don't know. I think there's just something to the seeds that were planted for all of us and carried through the ages, you know, and we just always made our enemies out to be, and I think that's a human thing, but we always made our agent, like our evil out to be a lot more dramatic than it was. Like the indigenous people were not just indigenous people. They were like satanic agents. Right. Yeah. And so it was always this, we just want to believe in so much that isn't true. And I think that's just part of the cognitive dissonance that it took to form this country. Right. It was like, yeah, just, I think that's my best answer. I don't know. I'm no expert. Yeah. I wasn't there.
But I mean, that's my best guess. It's good to do because I think as we, you know, try to like learn more about why we are where we are right now in this country, it's like so important to go back and look at that and have it summed up in an interesting way that you're doing it, because knowing the origins is like so helpful to see why we are where we are today, and just that's how we can hopefully start to like make it better. I mean, that's the only thing we can do. And
well, especially considering how recent our origins are too. Like, I mean, we're still so close in proximity to like all of that stuff. Like, that's obviously
we're so young.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Absolutely. People try to be like, slavery was 400 years ago. And I'm like, that's really not that like.
Yeah.
I know really people not. Who are ancestors of slaves. Like, give me a fucking break. Exactly.
And also like, yeah, slavery was a while ago. But you know what wasn't a while ago was like the civil rights movement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, that's like grandparents were like, a lot. You know, yeah, like my mom was born
within our psychic memory. Like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's like reverberations certainly exist. It's like, oh, you're supposed to go from being a completely disenfranchised group of people to just being exactly on par with everyone else.
It's like a sharp pivot. Like everything's all good.
Yeah. You guys, bootstraps are us. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, we get lots of fun stuff like that in American hysteria. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. America is a huge, complicated mess. And we try to make it make sense little bit more. That's
good.
What we hope
Thank
to do.
Totally. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that it just like society got to the point in Europe where like if culturally we hadn't gotten to that place in Europe, America wouldn't be the way that it is now, because it's like the movement of people into Europe, you know, kind of had something similar where you're going into the unknown like hundreds of years before that, but without like, you know, the development of society at that point to jump to this place. Like it's so many different things coming together that form it. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's very
just
stressful.
Crazy, man.
Well,
whoa, I know.
Think about that. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. We're back on Lady to Lady. This is Babs.
I'm Brandy.
I'm Tess.
And we're here with Chelsea Weber-Smith. And
hey.
We're going to answer a lady problem right now. We'd love for you to send your lady problem to us and let us fix everything. Our email is ladytoladycomedy@gmail.com. Also, if you're not in our Facebook group, come join us. It's called Lady to Lady Podcast. A lot of listeners post about stuff in there and solve each other's problems so we don't have to do anything.
Lady problems, do you have them? Lady problems.
All right. So this is a follow-up to a question that we did a while ago, and they have another question on top of it. Okay. Hi, ladies. The first question I sent in was the last question you read of 2019. Thank you for the honor of the decade. To refresh your memory, see below. Turns out my cloudy intuition for 2020 was warranted. New problem and details. I came out to myself as undoubtedly bi at 14 and had experiences of all types, but no deep romances by choice. The first girl I seriously pursued at 20 was my first love for the most traumatic year of my life. Our relationship went slowly downhill when I came out to my mother and she replied, "You know that doesn't exist, right?" We couldn't keep imagining a future for us after that, and I moved away after it was mutually over. A year and a half ago, I domestically partnered with a man. It was a whirlwind and more like his decision than mine. I was up for whatever felt safe. Our lives fit well together, which was a new feeling. It made me feel more desired than anyone has before and constantly reassures and appreciates me. We take care of each other, but times are hard right now, so emotional support is taking a lot of work. I know if it was in the budget, I would have a ring by now. I'm only 24, and going the rest of my life without kissing another woman seems wildly unrealistic. I begin to think this is his life where I don't live my true self at all times. Our current sex life is okay. His libido is lower than mine, so problems of incompatibility often come from that. He resists practicing to get better only because I accept whatever he has to give due to my own desire. Straight up question. What do I do now that I'm questioning being gay while basically engaged? It's scary to think that all these doubts come up only because I miss the drug of having so many firsts with my ex-girlfriend. Also, birth control is a bitch. I miss not worrying about it. Looking for some virtual aunt advice. Thanks again.
virtual aunts. That's us.
Yeah, I feel that.
That's a good question, man.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of things to talk about, but 24... I would not so be worried about being engaged or married anytime soon.
Well, but she is engaged, right? Or no,
if it wasn't for a if there wasn't for the budget, she would have a ring by now.
But that
does.
Doesn't
they're
not engaged.
Engaged.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like moving toward engagement. Well, right. It sounds like you or she need to, you know, like really interrogate with your partner what's happening inside of you, because as hard as it is, it's like if you're gonna marry someone, you got to be able to be honest.
Yeah,
you gotta be able to tell people that, you know, and that might suck. But and also, I don't know, I mean, I've lived a pretty crazy life. I'm real queer, and I have been since I was a teenager, and it has not been easy. I did not have a good coming out, and it's taken a very long time to get to that place. And if you're 24, you owe it to yourself to explore that. I don't know what that means. It doesn't even have to be exploring it to the point where you're doing it, but you have to like make these intentional decisions, right? Does that make sense? It's like, and even talking about an open relationship, I've done it before. It's not easy. If it wouldn't work for your relationship, it wouldn't, but you're allowed to ask for things and you're allowed to like have control in your relationship, because it sounds like she doesn't feel like she does, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think she owes it to herself and her partner to at least like pose that possibility, because like if you even are entertaining the idea of marrying this person, then you have to like let him, you have to show your whole self. Like you have to let him know who he's thinking about marrying, and like either it's going to work out or it's not, but like you're too young to like paint yourself into some corner where you're not going to be able to like live the life you want to lead.
Absolutely. And like at one point in this you say, I was up for whatever felt safe, and it was a whirlwind more like his decision than mine to get together. And to me that's like you were coming out of a chaotic space and you felt safe with him, and now maybe now that you've had that moment of like breathing and you've been in this and you're like, I like this person, but now I want to, I have the space to be able to like pursue checking out other parts of myself. And like that's read what you wrote there. I was up for whatever felt safe. That isn't about him specifically.
No.
You know?
Yeah. I think, I mean, I definitely identify with this as a bisexual who is partner with a man. And I think that it seems like you're kind of at a place where you either should I don't know. I'm not going to tell you to like move on, but it does that. Like Brandy said, with the, it feels safe. It feels like this, you know, the sex is quite not there. It does sound like you're lacking for a few things here. So that doesn't
essential thing.
So it doesn't sound like you necessarily that doesn't necessarily mean you end things, but I would definitely explore like how are you going to feel fulfilled, and It sounds like you're really interested in, you know, still being with women and seeing how that goes. So yeah, if it's talking to him about an open relationship or saying to yourself, like, is this really what I want? Or could I be okay, you know, just moving past this right now? Because mm-hmm. I wouldn't, you know, I'd be careful of getting overly comfortable, because it does sound like you're going to regret it if you decide, like, this is it forever, you know, with this one person, whatever that means.
And, like, I feel like whatever you're doing with your life right now, like, she should put herself in a position where, like, whether or not it works out with this guy, you know you're going to be fine. So, like,
yeah.
So make sure that it's not, like, mm-hmm. stability that's keeping you in this relationship.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
No, absolutely.
And you deserve to have, like, a wow type of thing, right?
Everybody
deserves to. And that can be comfortable. That can be comfortable and safe. It doesn't have to be, like, this crazy affair, like you know, like a whirlwind situation. Yeah. It can feel really safe, but you still want to, like, enjoy having sex with your partner, and you really want to, you know, feel like you can be honest.
Yeah. Yep.
I've talked about this before, but I have always struggled with being honest with my partners. Like, doesn't matter who they were. I have a really hard time, like, saying what I want, you know? So I think, like, the more you can work on that, the younger you are, they're just going to get used to it, you know? I mean, I'm in my 30s now and I'm still having a hard time. So I think, like, that's only going to benefit you in all ways of your life if you can, like, really start working on that part of just being like, this is what I want. I'm not afraid to, like, talk to them about it, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And honesty is, like, a goal. You know, it's not like, oh, go be honest. Like, that's some easy thing. That's, like, the hardest thing in the entire world.
Yeah, and it's, like, so often really uncomfortable. Like, so I think it takes, like, some, like, willpower sometimes to, like, push yourself into that discomfort of being honest. Like, I think the more you can kind of train yourself to do that, if this is not end up being, like, the end-all be-all of relationships for you, the more you can train yourself to be honest with your partner now, I think the more that'll benefit you in future relationships, too.
Absolutely. And you're 24 and nobody likes being told that they're young. But
I know.
I'm also in my 30s. And if I made a decision when I was 24 about who I was going to be with, I would not be happy.
I'd still be in Salt Lake. Yeah.
Not to say that that's true for you.
No, some
listener.
People, it
not
works to, out great.
Yeah.
But
no, yeah. Yeah.
But you don't have to feel rushed. You don't have to feel rushed. Let's just say that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You've only been with him for a year and a half, too. Like, this is not, like, you know, this is still a relatively new thing. So if you're already having all of these issues with, like, your sex life and everything, too, and you guys are still relatively new together, like, there's a lot to be looking at here. And also just, like, I also try to think, like, if my partner was feeling the way that I'm feeling about them right now, would I be feeling that way about me? Would I be happy?
Mm. Yeah.
And it's like, no. Like, that's not the way that you want to be loved. If, you know, then you want to, that's not necessarily the right thing for you.
Yeah. And then everyone should move on.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
It's good for everyone. Honesty is good for everyone.
Yeah.
If you can't do it for yourself, do it for the other person to start. You know, like, that's what I think is, like, oh, he's not going to be happy knowing, like, if he knew I was unhappy. There's no, you know, or you don't want to be with someone who doesn't care if you're unhappy. So
no.
Yeah.
And, like, as much as you try to suppress those frustrations, if they're not dealt with head on, they just come out in really weird ways anyway. Like, there's no actual way to, like, avoid these confrontations. They just end up manifesting in, like, ways that you are not intending them to. So
yeah. Not cute.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. No.
Well, guys.
Oh, and being gay rules too. Being queer is great. It's super scary, and then it's like, you know, it gets better.
Oh my god, I've never heard that's such a cool phrase
to bring back that campaign. Yeah, I know. I came up with that. I actually invented that.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you for writing in, and good luck. And it sounds like you know what you know, at least the basis of what you want. So, I think just try to trust your gut.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just about taking those leap of faith and believing in yourself, which I know is, like, easier said than done, but
yeah.
You got this.
I should go back and listen to all of our podcasts and see what advice I've actually taken for myself, because...
Oh, man.
It's very so much easier to give it than it is to take it.
Always.
So true.
Always, yeah.
Well, that's our show. Chelsea, tell everyone where they can find you and find the show and do all that fun stuff.
Thank you. Yeah. Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, the gamut. And yeah, we'd love to have you come listen. We've got 3 full seasons and we're starting our 4th season in the fall. So there will be plenty more coming. And yeah, it's just me talking. So you can get used to that. It's like essays. I read essays that are not boring. Not boring essays, I promise.
Well, thank you. You're doing awesome work, so we thank really you. Appreciate it. And thank you for coming on.
Oh, my God. Thank you guys for having me. This has been so fun. I really appreciate it.
Hell yeah.
And if you're a Patreon member, we'll be doing a top secret session. So come over to patreon.com/ladytolady if you are interested to see whatever that is. Sometimes it's about pooping our pants. Ooh. Sometimes it's about other stuff. You never know what you're going to get.
She gets crazy. Right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
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 Can't get enough of us? Subscribe to our Patreon for exclusive bonus content, access to our first 100 episodes, and more. Go to patreon.com/ladytolady now to sign up. As little as a dollar a month keeps a roof over the glam cave and keeps you laughing, even when your coworkers stare. That's patreon.com/ladytolady.
And don't forget to follow us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Lady to Lady Comedy. Join our Facebook group, Lady to Lady Podcast, to chat with other fans about episodes or even post your own lady problems. Check out our website, ladytoladycomedy.com, for show notes, videos, and merch.
And duh, follow our individual accounts, Babs Gray, Brandazzle, and Testify Barker for jokes and info and where you can see us perform live. And if you want to send us snacks, stickers, or a lock of your own hair, I don't know, whatever, our P.O. Box is 412-794 Los Angeles, California, 90041. And please, leave us a review on iTunes, but only if you like us.
We love you.
We love you.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.